Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hi guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. I am so excited to get back to recording. It's been a long July. It's been really good. I've been kind of on a forced hiatus because I've been somewhere with very little internet, but at the same time, I haven't forgot you guys. And I actually got to meet Leia for the first time this month, which was really, really fun. She's over there like,
lovely.
Yeah. I got really sick with COVID, or at least I think it was COVID. I never got
it. It was
a
like
positive.
A mixture of things.
It was like a flu, a slash a cold.
Yeah.
I got really sick.
A cocktail of illness.
Yeah. Right around the time that we were supposed to like go out and hang out and stuff like that. But we still managed to do it. It was still so fun. We watched a couple of Buffy episodes. Which three did we watch? We watched two. It was Storyteller from season 7.
Normal Again.
Such a, yeah. An unusual pair of episodes.
We were gonna watch I Will Remember You so that we could all cry together, mm-hmm. but we decided we're gonna be covering that soon, so
very soon.
You know, for our mental health.
Yeah,
just wait a little bit.
Just wait. Yeah, for our mental health. Exactly. I know. I love that episode, but I can only take so much.
It's a little heart-wrenching. It's so painful.
But I'm so excited to get back to a regular recording and releasing schedule. I think that was one of the hardest things about starting the podcast was we had to kind of wait a month or so before we released stuff. But yeah, I'm so excited. And this season is just going to get better and better. So
it sure will.
But first, we have to get through this episode. Yes. No, there's good things to talk about, fun things to say, but this is definitely, I was watching it and I was like, after having the amazing pilot, I felt like this was very repetitive, and we will talk about why that is in just a second. First things first, this episode, Lonely Heart, it's actually singular, not plural. So it's Lonely Heart versus Lonely Hearts, which I have been saying it incorrectly this entire time.
Me too.
And apparently there was like a huge like kerfuffle. People just didn't know which was which. So David Fury took to Twitter, I think a few years back or something like that, and was like, no, guys, it's actually Lonely Heart. And he wrote it that way. So it was broad enough that it could encompass any one of the characters, which I guess Lonely Hearts, I feel like, would have done the same thing. But
yeah.
So
maybe it had to do with the monster too.
Oh, the monster was lonely.
Like like it takes like, I don't even understand what this monster does, to be honest. I still don't really get it. So you're going to have to explain that to me.
I'm going to have to explain it to you. Dude, I don't think I care enough
to explain
it. I
don't get it either. Like, I'm like, wait, what does this monster want from
me? It has really no – it just keeps saying it wants a connection. And I'm like, but why? Why do you want a connection?
It's like trying to find the ultimate host is what I got from the episode.
Yeah, it was very hastily thrown together. But there's a reason for why that is. And Leia, do you want to explain why?
Oh, yes, because this was not supposed to be the – this is not the first, like, script that they wrote for episode 2. This was actually the rewrite of the original script, which was supposed to be called Corrupt. And they wrote the script, and they were – I believe it was, like, 2 days from shooting the script – and the network shut it down because it was way too dark. So they didn't even get to shoot it. And we both read it, and it's pretty dark.
It is pretty dark, but I actually kinda like it better than this one.
I feel like I think it's better than this one, but I don't think that would have that would not have like been aired on the WB at the time.
No way.
It was like way too like crazy for that, for the time and the network.
Well, I think for even being a second episode, it would have been too much as well, especially for people who are fans of Buffy. Like, I know a lot of people who watched the pilot and their parents were immediately like, nope, this is just not what you're, we're going to go back to Buffy. This is a lot darker. And so knowing the second episode was even darker than that, I think it would have probably alienated a lot of people who are looking for something similar to Buffy. There's actually a lot of confusion. Like, even when I was reading some of the writers and producers' quotes and stuff, there's a lot of confusion about what exactly was in the second script. I think a lot of them either never read it or it's been so long, because a lot of people, like David Greenwalt, was talking about how Angel tasted her blood and stuff. And I know we talked about that in the pilot. And I think sometimes they got confused with those like two situations, like Kate being a prostitute that was addicted to cocaine and then the blood licking. Those happened in two separate episodes and they were both cut from both episodes. So I think it's important to have that distinction, remembering the first episode is the one they were going to have Angel drink that girl's blood. And then this is the episode that you're going to have the prostitution and cocaine and stuff. So sometimes they get lumped together, and I've heard a lot of people get confused by that.
Okay, so in the original script, so it was titled Corrupt, Doyle gets a vision of this girl. He gets a name, Crystal. Right? I think that was her name.
Yeah, it's Crystal. Yeah.
Crystal. And he says to Angel, you have to save Crystal. So then Angel goes to, and he leads him to a strip club.
Yeah, pretty sure. I kind of like breezed through it.
Yeah. So basically the premise is Angel goes to this strip club and one of the strippers like dies.
So it starts out with, you don't go to the strip club first. You see this like stripper who's kind of, you can tell she's been drugged. And there's this guy and he basically rapes her. He takes her into this car and it's inferred that they have sex even though she says no and stuff. And then like, and then one of them dies. You don't know who. Right. There's like a monster that appears and then they get the vision. They go to the strip club and you see Crystal there. She'd very clearly been with a guy because she's a prostitute. This point, you don't know that she's actually Kate and another undercover cop. And then Angel shows up. She thinks he just wants to have sex with her. And then he ends up finding out like she's a cocaine addict. He finds like the white powder in her room and like all this stuff. And so it leads to eventually the reveal that there's like this crystal, this like gem that these girls are wearing that their pimp, for lack of a better word, is putting on them. And it like, he's like this demon guy and eventually it ends up killing the women and stuff like that. But there's several really, really cool moments between Kate/Crystal and Angel, and some of the dialogue that was cut out. I was like, oh, I wish this had been kept, because I think that that's what's missing.
Kind of kept the same type of themes with like the connecting and stuff and like, you know, two lonely, you know, trying to find like find yourself through the loneliness. Like, I feel like there was still kind of that like theme of that. But yeah, the combos in the original script were so much better.
And I felt like there was a little bit more of a distinction between the themes of the pilot episode and this one in the original script. I feel like it made sense for where it was going. In this one, I feel like the themes of this of Lonely Heart. I keep wanting to say Lonely Hearts. Lonely I feel heart. Like the themes of this episode, Lonely Heart, is just basically a redundant, shallower version of what happened in the pilot. So I don't really know that it was necessary, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So Tim Minear talks about all the stuff that happened with the second script. He said, it would seem that this was about the same time that the internet ran rampant with the rumors that the WB had shut down the show for retooling. You can't really call it shut down because we hadn't really started. We just pushed back the shoot date for the first episode a week or two. It's not like the alarms went off and we had to pull plugs on everything. I've read on the internet where people were saying the network freaked and they told us to shut down, and that's not true at all. We were still creating what the idea of the show was going to be, and basically we decided to rethink that first episode, or I guess second episode. The other thing that people don't realize is that a lot of the other episodes that we've done this year were written much earlier and did not change significantly. It was really that first episode where we went back, rethought it, and we were lucky we had the luxury to do that. And then David Fury, who wrote both Lonely Heart and Corrupt, says this. I broke the story with Joss and David, which was a little dark. It introduced the character of Kate Lockley, the policeman and undercover cop. But it went to darker places. There were some pretty awful things in there. It dealt with some kind of prostitutes who were ripping people apart. Anyway, she was a cop who was going undercover with a prostitution ring, and it was actually based on a movie called Report to the Commissioner. That's where the name Lockley comes from. There was a great twisted thing in the movie that he was an undercover cop that realizes that this prostitute or criminal's girlfriend is another undercover cop. He winds up inadvertently killing her, and the whole movie is told in flashbacks. So in putting Angel in with somebody he didn't realize was a cop, I was trying to get that same sort of thing. David and Joss, and maybe more so David, wanted to set it apart from Buffy. He didn't want it to be Buffy too, so he wanted to go to a much darker place. He wanted to be pushing the envelope. That's what I went for, and a couple of weeks from production, the studio just halted. This is a studio from which there was virtually no notes that they ever gave on the Buffy scripts. We'd get on the notes call for a script, and they'd just go, "This is great, keep doing what you're doing." That's generally how they went. Angel, because it was a new entity, may have had more scrutiny on it when they recognized that this isn't as fun as Buffy, it's far more dark. They kind of put the pause button on it and shut down production. So they apparently shut down the episode in production, I think 2 days or 3 days before it was supposed to start filming, which that is insane because then they had to completely rewrite the script in just those 2 days.
Yeah, it says on the script, Corrupt was supposed to be the second episode of Angel season one, but production was shut down 2 days before I started shooting because the WB thought it was too dark. Part of the script have since been cannibalized and used in other Angel stories. Mm-hmm.
Which I think, like, reading through, I see that they've done that, like, very vaguely, but there are definitely aspects that I'm like, I don't think I see this anywhere else in the show, at least as overtly as they were portraying it in this episode. So,
yeah.
Kind of a shame, but also understandable, you know?
Yeah, it was dark.
So David Greenwalt says, and both David and Joss Whedon agree that the network was actually right, which I thought was kind of cool. They said the network was right. It would have been too much to ask of an audience too soon. We were kind of off and were out there a little bit. We just adjusted it to not be so dark. So we fixed it and turned it into a really good show that went to a lot of interesting places over the years. People frequently come up to me and say, oh, I like Angel better than Buffy. In the beginning, part of the problem is that the metaphor in Buffy was so clear. It was a little harder in Angel because people in their 20s are just not that interesting. I beg to differ. I also think part of the problem is that we were suffering a little bit of Buffy fatigue and wanted to do something quite different as opposed to something just a little bit different. So they kind of realized that and overcorrected and went to a place that was a little too extreme and then realized, okay, we need to dial it back a little bit. We need to figure out exactly where we want to go and realize that we can still have a dark tone and feel without going like completely overboard, you know?
Yeah.
And then I highlighted this part of the original script. You probably read this. It's the moment between Kate and Angel towards the end of what would have been the episode. And there's this beautiful moment between Kate and Angel. And I thought that I wish they had kept this in. But Kate says, "Why not me? You don't know me." Angel says, "You're right, I don't, but this isn't you. It's your demons, the ones eating you up inside, filling you with anger, telling you it's hopeless." Kate, breaking down, says, "It is hopeless." Angel says, "You're wrong. It's a struggle. It's painful, but there's always hope. Believe me, I know a little something about losing yourself to the demons inside of you." And I think that's something that I really loved. I loved that you saw more parallels between Kate and Angel, especially thinking about like in Enemies when Angel kind of has to go undercover a little bit. And I really loved that they showed how Kate was wrestling with the fact that she'd done some horrible things, that like she'd kind of become a different persona. She couldn't really separate Kate and Crystal very much anymore, and how Angel's obviously wrestling with that same thing. And I think that this episode would have been a lot better if they had emphasized that a little bit more versus having the just kind of a repeat of the pilot. But
well, it's kind of also similar to the Angel and Faith relationship in the sense that like Kate was going to murder all of those people. And she was just like blacked out, like going to murder all these people. And Angel was like, "No, like they deserve to die, but you're not the one that should do it because then you'll lose yourself." And that was just a really cool. And also it kind of reminded me of the scene on the hilltop on Amends where it was like, this is painful, but like you have to go on.
Yeah. So in the original script, at one point, Kate, all her friends that were prostitutes that she worked with get killed by this guy. And so she wants to go seek revenge, and she tries to kill the guy, and Angel's the one that stops her and says, no, like, this isn't your role, your job. Like, you're going to further lose yourself if you keep going down this path. And that's what leads to that conversation between them. And I was like, oh, like, I feel like that gave Kate a really good role in the episode. Obviously, we'll see where she goes from here on out, but that seems like a very drastic change to the character very early on, and I'm curious to see where they're going to go with her now that they've changed that backstory very much, you know?
Right.
So in the end, David Fury and Marty Noxon ended up working on Lonely Heart and wrote the script, and David Fury says, the shutdown for the darkness of the script needed to go lighter, and the show did veer a little more into Buffy territory. It lightened up a bit, but it always remained a darker version of Buffy. We had to earn it, I guess. The second episode was most scary to them because it was so dark, but the show went to some very dark places later, which I kind of agree with. I was like, it's interesting how they kind of had to like ease into it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I know we haven't gotten to this part yet in Buffy, but someone was talking about, it's from Shangle's Reviews, and he says, it's not lost on me that this demon comes about right at the same time that Buffy meets Parker, and Parker pretends to like Buffy, sleeps with her, then moves on from her. And he's like, he labels the whole thing as a fun experience and leaves Buffy devastated. And he says, Parker is the human equivalent of the burrower demon. And I was like, yes, that's so crazy to me. I never made that connection, but he totally is. He's someone who just wants casual sex for the connection, but he's not communicating to people what it is he exactly wants. He's using them.
Which is exactly what this demon does.
Exactly what this demon does. It's a little bit more well-defined, but like,
yeah.
In case you're wondering what this demon is, what it does, just think
it's Parker.
It's Parker.
It's Parker in demon form. Parker is a demon.
He's a burrower demon.
in our hearts, but in our not hearts. In the show.
It's a little satisfying. So the next time you guys watch this and you see Angel completely like pummeling this demon, just pretend it's Parker and you'll feel a lot better about the episode.
Oh my goodness. So much closure for everybody. There you go.
Bam. Now we don't even need to analyze it at all. That's it. All right. So Leia, before we jump into this episode, what do you think the themes of this episode are?
Oh my goodness. How could I ever guess? Because they don't repeat it 35 million times in every scene.
Is it disconnect?
I think it's the opposite of disconnect, Sarah, actually.
I can tell.
I mean, they hammer it in like so much
kind of
throughout the entire episode, like in your face. It's so heavy-handed. It's obviously about like loneliness, making a connection. You know, there's the whole like hookup culture and dating, and it's just very like in your face. But I think they were trying to make it into a metaphor with the monster, but it's just
it
like
did not work.
But they just kept like repeating,
yeah,
just trying to make a connection. I'm like, yes, I understand, like,
but why, like, especially like,
what is the purpose?
The bartender out there, he's like, I just need to make a connection, just need to feel someone. I'm like, this I'm is like, weird. I don't understand.
I mean, like I was telling you earlier, and we'll get into it, but like, I feel like there's a lot of like relatability for like somebody watching it that's in their 20s, that's dating and going to bars and doing that whole scene. You kind of look at it and you're like, yeah, like I know exactly how this feels. But at the same time, it was just like, it was like too much like emphasis on the overall theme. And it's like, we get it enough.
It didn't have much depth to it. Like, I kind of wish that like the metaphor would have, so a good metaphor is not, there's not going to be no perfect metaphor, but a good one is going to kind of help you see it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was so vague and so broad enough that I was like, it could stand for many different things, but none of it is very clear. So yeah, I think mostly it's just loneliness, how it can eat you up and consume you and make you desperate. I did think it was really interesting that confidence plays a huge role in how attractive you are, because these people were not able to pick up on these attractive – or not able to get together with these attractive people until they had the burrower demon. And it's very much shown that they are suddenly more confident and, like, they start wearing bolder lipstick and colors and carrying themselves differently. And even, like, Angel, when he's beating up those guys with Doyle and stuff, all of a sudden the girls are super attracted to him, whereas before he's, like, stumbling all over himself because, like, there's a confidence in what he knows, you know? So I thought that was kind of interesting, but that was probably the deepest thing I got out of the episode.
Yeah, I did not even think of that, but that, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. You ready? Ready to talk about it?
I'm ready. I'm gonna drink some water first.
All right. So Angel, he's sitting alone in the dark in his office, probably thinking about Buffy, probably wondering what she's doing. Yeah, of course you did. Because what else is he thinking about?
Yeah, he's definitely sitting there thinking about Buffy.
He's sitting there thinking about Doyle. That's what he's thinking about. No,
it's Buffy. I don't think so, Sarah. It's Buffy.
Yeah, I think so too. Doyle comes in, turns on the light, and is like, hey, so we talked about this last episode. You know, you have to form connections with people. I feel like we need a bell every time that word comes out. Doyle's like, you shouldn't be, like, moping around sitting in here like some kind of, and Angel's like, a vampire? Like, what I am, you mean? He was like, well, I mean, like, a slacker, you know? You got to get out. And Angel's like, but why? Like, what's the reason?
That's fair.
And I mean, he's not wrong. And that's something Passion of the Nerd talked about. He was like, he felt like this episode was important because Angel is still looking for his why. Buffy has been his why. She's not anymore. That's what's inferred in this moment. He's sitting in the dark, probably thinking about Buffy, his why, and going, well, there's no need for me to do anything else because she's not out there. There's no point, you know? So then Cordelia comes in. And is all like, hey, guys, I have these fancy schmancy little business cards. And then there's, like, this fun little dialogue where, like, nobody knows exactly what it is, which
– a butterfly? A bird? An
but it does
owl?
Not look like an angel.
What is it?
I love how they make it just obscure enough and you're like, this is not working. This is not great. But Doyle, bless his heart, tries so hard to cover it up and is all like, yeah, like it totally looks just like a butterfly. And she's like, ugh, okay. And then they're like, oh, yes, an angel. So obvious. And Doyle's like, brilliant. So obvious. So clever on so many levels. Just like this episode, right? Oh my gosh. And then we see Doyle experience his first vision, which we've never seen on screen before. And let me tell you, they did a very good job of making that look very painful because
they do look so painful.
Agree with Cordelia. I would definitely be giving that back. That does not look like fun. And then it almost seemed as though, like, Angel was trying to hide the visions from Cordelia for a quick second because I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's something that was in the original script was that Cordelia knew that Doyle was a demon. And they decided to change that. I'm like, these are some pretty drastic things that they're changing with the script. So, like, I'm really interested to see where they want to go.
Yeah, they
with
make
that.
A point of Doyle telling Angel, you know, don't tell Cordelia that I'm half demon.
Yep. So then Doyle has a vision of, like, some obscure bar, but he doesn't narrow in on a single person, really, which he was just like, there's no faces, it's just a feeling, which that would be so irritating. I'd be like, a little bit more specifics here, please. So they decide, okay, we actually have to go out after all. And the nightclub is called Dioblique, which is a really overly fancy name for some place that looks very dirty and scummy.
Oh, my God. It looks like it smells like vodka and, like, bleach or something.
And loneliness and lack of connection.
Yeah, just no connection.
I'm starting to hate that word. I got the ick every time they said it. I was like, enough.
Again.
I just want to connect. I just need to feel gross.
No.
And then we have that girl with blonde hair sitting at the bar, which I'm pretty sure they use that for the title sequence, right?
Yep, yep.
So we have this dude that comes up to her, and they do the classic bait and switch that Joss always does. He has this blonde girl that seems helpless, and then we're like, okay, the bad guy, he has that, like, look, and we're like, he has bad intentions. This is not going to go well.
His name is Kevin.
His name is Kevin, very basic. And he's, like, talking about how he wants to meet this dream girl. And she seems very, like she's kind of got a wall up. Like, she thought it was very sweet, some of the things he said. But I was curious to see if this was actually going to work on her because she seemed a little like, okay, yeah, that's sweet. But, like, I don't really trust you. And they start talking about Ken and Barbie. Ken and Barbie had it easy. They never had to come to places like this. I'm like, because they're fictional characters, Kevin.
Also, like, who wants to go to a place like that, realistically? No,
not me. Not okay, me. And that's what I kept thinking the entire time. I was like, if they made singles night at, like, a nice, quiet little coffee shop, or if they did it at a cute little game cafe where you can go and like play board games or stuff, I'd be all there. But nobody wants to go to a loud place.
I would still not go, to be honest. You'd still not go? I'm not going to anything called singles night. There's no way.
Okay, so what if it was just like game night and they were like, can no, you guys can play board no. games? You wouldn't? What would lure?
Literally, I would rather sit in my house in the dark like Angel.
Your Angel.
I am Angel. Yeah. Yeah, I'm Angel. What if
they said, like, free taco night? Would you come?
I can make tacos at home. Better than they can make them at Dope Leak or whatever.
Dope Leak. It sounds like
like oblique, like your abs.
Like oblique. Or no, like, no. Like, I was thinking, like, it's so bleak. Dope Leak. It sounds
yes,
like. Yes. But it's interesting because Dope Leak, isn't it French for, like, see-through, like, transparency, yeah. All that connection? Yeah.
No. Can I just say this scene between these two is like any person who is single has like been in this situation and it is absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I think, but I'm also Angel, so I feel maybe other people would
100% agree. I can't relate fully simply because my husband was the first guy to ever ask me on a date, so I never really had to, like, go through all of this stuff, but I felt like they did a good enough job of making it awkward that I can feel the embarrassment, the secondhand embarrassment and awkwardness coming through the screen, and these are just actors. And let me tell you, I would never leave my house either if that was me.
Never.
What gets me is, like, you had so many of these characters coming to the same place night after night, and I know, like, they're just looking for someone, but I'm like, why? This just sucks. Like, go to the library. You'll meet someone better there, you know? All right, so Doyle, Angel, and Cordelia show up, and I want to know how Cordelia got into this place, because technically, isn't she right out of high school?
She's technically still 18,
Explain
I believe.
This to me, Leia. What
I know. Is this? I feel like they just aged her up so much.
Yeah.
Just from the first episode, like right out of the gate, she looks like, you know, she's in her mid 20s at this point. But really, like, we've got to remember Cordelia is 18 years old. I think at other points, like, we can see her like drinking and stuff, and it's like, I feel like they just completely disregarded Cordelia's age. Like, I don't think you hear anybody mention how old Cordelia is in the entire run of the series.
Right. Well, they have that conversation in here where they talk about, she's like, oh man, high school, it was so much easier dating people and stuff. I'm like, nobody in their mid-20s is going to be referring to high school for their dating life. You know what I mean? Because they've had a few years under their belt. So I think there's still remnants of the fact that she is young, but it's kind of like they skirt past some of the things that that they should. Like, she's not 21 yet, you know? She would be carded.
Like, I'm pretty sure they celebrate in the entire run of the series, they only celebrate Cordelia's birthday once.
Yeah.
And not any other time. Whereas on Buffy, they celebrate
like it every year.
Every year. Yeah.
1 year.
So it's almost like they want you to forget how old she really is because they're aging her up automatically. I mean, it makes sense because she has to fit into like this environment. But like some of the stuff that happens really doesn't make sense for somebody like that's 18 technically, or like 19, let's say.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
All right. So the gang agrees to split up. Cordelia's like, take my new calling cards. And Angel's like, yeah, I'm not going to use that. That's okay. And then we have Angel trying really hard to figure out if anybody needs help. But I thought it was really, really realistic. Like, they had that one guy that thought he was hitting on him. And I was like, yeah, because he's just kind of unabashedly himself, and he's very open and honest, so someone's definitely going to take that the wrong way and think
he's also
flirting.
So awkward.
He's so awkward.
He's just so painfully awkward, but it's so cute.
It is. He's the only one that can get away with this, for sure. Also, I cracked up when the bartender was like, don't worry, it's early yet. The really hot women don't mosey in until around 11. And I wrote, ha, you got it all wrong, buddy. We're in bed watching Buffy and Angel by 11. No. We are home.
I am not women out need their sleep. At that hour of the night. Come on.
Leia's like, as a certified hot woman, I would know.
Do you remember when people used to go out? I don't know if you like you guys, at least my group of friends. People would be like, oh, let's go out at 11.
Yeah, no. Like, even at 8 o'clock now, I'm like, why would we go out? Why?
If it's dark out, we're not leaving the house. We have to leave the house when it's still light out. And I need to be home by like 12.
I need to be able to take off my bra and lay down and fart without judgment. Thank you.
I want to shower before I go to bed. Like, yes. I'm not going to bed from like oblique, like, scents all over me and people smells. I don't know. Ew.
Yeah, I gotta wash the oblique off of you.
I gotta wash the oblique off of me before I go to bed. Yep. So, yeah. That bartender was wrong, is what we're saying.
Yeah, the real hot ones are already in bed, so.
Yeah, 100%.
That's why they're not finding anyone, because the real hot women are asleep, because that's all that matters, right? You want a connection.
You gotta get your beauty sleep.
That is the moral of this episode, is if you want a connection, find a hot person.
If you want a connection, go to the bar at 8 p.m.
Yes.
And that's where you will find the hot people.
Yeah, exactly.
If there you go later, we'll be in bed. So.
Yeah. And this is coming from a certified hot person. I can see her with my eyes.
I don't look very hot right now, but that's okay.
You always look hot. You're so cute.
Oh my God, Sarah.
I know, right? You're like, stop hitting on me.
Stop. Like, I'm Angel. I'm Angel in the bar. I swear I wasn't hitting on you.
Yeah, the guy is like absolute look of disgust. The funny thing was they were both dressed the exact same. Both had like the leather jackets. Both have like the spiked hair and everything. It was so funny. All right, so Cordelia's walking up to every single living person, giving them her calling card, and I'm like, here we go. You know, any effort to make money and network. She insults this guy about his lazy eye, then says,
oh my God, I wrote that line. Hey, you look troubled, or is that your lazy eye?
Oh, I love it. This is Cordelia at her best right here.
This is peak Cordelia, 100%.
So then Doyle like sidles up to her. I will say this episode was really great for kind of pushing forward the Doyle and Cordelia romance as one-sided as it is. We kind of got to see more of an interaction between the two of them. And obviously there wasn't as much in the episode before. And I really, really enjoyed like those little bits and pieces. I think the episode would have done better if they had pushed that to the forefront a little bit more instead of focusing on the repetition of like, okay, the burrower monster is seeking another body, you know? Okay, we get it. This is gross. So then Doyle's like, hey, like you want to make sure you stay under radar because you don't want the police to get wind that, you know, he's doing some stuff or Angel has an investigation and all this other stuff like that, because then like they might think he's a vampire at some point, which I was like, that's quite a leap. But clearly setting us up for the reveal of Kate. We want to – the show wants us to see her as maybe an ally, but maybe a threat too, you know? And then Cordelia. Okay, so I'm curious about your thoughts. Do you think that Cordelia was accurate? I mean, I know it's kind of up for interpretation in her assessment of these characters in the
bar. So watching this scene, I wrote, insights are judgmental, Cordelia. And I think that Cordelia can be very insightful, but I also think that she's also like very judgmental as a person. So I don't know. I think it's we're supposed to see it as like funny, like, oh, Cordelia like sees through people from like superficial things, like just by looking at them. But I don't know if I would call it insightful because it's very like she's people watching. She's people watching and she's making like shallow like judgments that are funny. Yeah. Like that's all I really saw it as. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I agree. I agree with that a lot. Simply because you have the whole thing where she's like, oh, you have to be rich to snag that Calvin Klein model she's leaving with, talking about Sharon. And then that's a observation that a couple of the other guys, like the bartender and Angel and that one other guy, talk about Sharon. They're like, oh, she's homely. Like they talk about her looks a whole lot. I feel like she's not really much better than a lot of the other couples. And I think that that's what the episode's trying to say, is that these three people are all trying to make a, sorry, Leia, connection with each other. They're trying to find, I know, it's just going to come out.
I'll just sigh every time you say it. I'll just be like, ugh.
No, but I think the point is, like, everybody is searching for a connection. Everybody is searching for a way to bond with each other. And so I think that by Cordelia saying that, she's showing that she's just as superficial and shallow as the majority of the people around, which I think is kind of an interesting observation. But yeah, I do agree. I think it is a bit judgmental.
Could have told you that for free.
I know. Sorry. I'm trying to squeeze blood out of a turnip here in this episode. I'm like, there's got to be something bigger here.
There's got to be.
And then we have Kate. We have Kate. Okay, so first impressions from this episode. What do you think of her?
She's got very pretty eyes. Kind of stiff. Zero chemistry with Angel.
Yeah, that was my biggest takeaway.
But also, like, Angel kind of has game. Remember when he asked, oh, your choice? Like, I was like, what?
I know.
It's like, Angel?
But David Boreanaz has chemistry with walls.
David Boreanaz does have a lot of chemistry with, like, anybody.
And I think that it can make up for the lack of chemistry, but I just didn't feel it coming from either one of them. And yeah. I think that's the biggest thing that their relationship was missing in this episode.
I think at one point I was like, are they implying that Kate and Angel made a connection with, like, a question mark? And obviously that's what we're supposed to take away from the episode at the very end, is that they made a connection that was beyond that, like, superficial, you know, connection that people were making at the club. That's what I felt like the episode was implying.
I think you're right, but I mean, I disagree with the episode.
Like, you just couldn't, like, feel it. Yeah, because
it felt very awkward and forced. It honestly felt like all of the other relationships that we're trying to build. And I don't know why she, I mean, I understand a little bit why she feels a bit hurt when he goes and talks to that other girl, but I don't know why she continued to talk to him the next night after. Like, I mean, she was a little extra harsh, but if I were her, I'd just be like, okay, clearly we're not going to work out. We want different things. But she just, like, went from 0 to 10. Anyway, we'll get there. Okay. Yeah. So this conversation, I will say, I felt like Kate was very interesting in the sense that, like, both of them are pretending to be someone else, but they actually are that persona. Like, Kate's pretending to be super vulnerable, but as the episode goes on, you find out she actually is, even though she's undercover, you know? So we have this awkward interaction when she says, not that you look bad, you look very nice. I think I'm just going to have my drink. And then they introduce themselves to each other. And Kate's very self-deprecating, talks about how she's just kind of not very cool. And then Angel's so sweet. He's like, I'm just looking for someone to rescue. Are you maybe in need of some rescuing? Says the same line that, like, Tina swooned all over.
Honestly.
And she's like, she kind of, like, she doesn't say the same thing that Tina says, but she's basically like, why are you here in this town? Like, obviously, you've got to be trying to pull something over on me, because they cannot believe that someone would actually have good intentions and be that purely motivated in this town, which, again, I feel like is a cheap mirror of what happened in the episode before.
Although I do have to say, with Kate, I do like the way she plays that vulnerability. Like, I believe her. She looks like the way she plays it is very, like, realistic. You know, like, she's trying to make conversation, but it's awkward. And, like, you can tell that she, like, wants to talk to him, but she doesn't know how. And it's cute. I mean, I don't really see the chemistry, but, like, Kate on her own, like I enjoy the way she portrayed, like, she portrayed the vulnerability in this scene.
No, yeah. I totally agree. I think it works because the actress is playing Kate authentically. And then I don't think she realizes that she is being authentic in the moment, but, like, what's coming out is real, you know? And then Angel saying that he's a veterinarian is cracking me up, because in the episode prior, when he was trying to make contact with Tina, he's like, hey, like, this is a great dog. Like, he leans over to the dog. So I feel like his crutch seems to be animals, which is really cute.
And Buffy calls him an angry puppy, so.
Yeah, everybody calls him a puppy. So, yeah, that's what he is.
A Care Bear with fangs.
So then we have Cordelia and Doyle, and Doyle's like, so you got everyone figured out. And she's like, yeah, except for you. Like, I just don't quite get you. And then she asks him about his visions. And one thing I really do like about this episode is once again, they reiterate some of like the lore. Like they have that moment where they talk about Angel needing to be invited into Cordelia's house. So there's things like that where they're like once again establishing how that's going, but they do it in a very organic way. And that's something that Buffy has always done really well. I don't feel like they're necessarily information dumping just for the sake of it. Like, it's usually like put in very well.
Right.
So then this guy comes and hits on Cordelia and, well, hits on her, but also like majorly insults her.
One thing I do like about Cordelia in this scene is she, when she realizes what's happening, she's very much like, yeah, she sticks up for herself. She doesn't just like cower and like, obviously, yeah. Like, she's not going to, like, throw hands at the guy because he's bigger than her. But that's something I really like about Cordelia is she'll stand up for herself when she needs to.
Yeah, I totally agree. They didn't just have Doyle, like, jump in there. Like, it was Cordelia first saying, hey, did you hear what he said? That's not cool. And then Doyle enters. Yeah. And it was not because Cordelia's like, go say something for me or go attack him. And then cut back to Kate and Angel, and Kate's talking about how she struggles to trust people, especially men. And then she says, in a place like this, people are not going to actually show you who they really are. Everybody's too busy. And then Angel's like, well, what are you looking for? She says, I guess I'm just trying to make a connection. And the more I come to the places like this, the harder it gets. And I'm like, girl, you're going to the wrong place.
Yeah. Like, but I feel like that is so realistic, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's what people genuinely do. People go to places like that to, like, meet people. But you always leave very unsatisfied, like, even lacking even more. You leave feeling like
– you almost feel worse because all you end up doing is comparing yourself with everyone else.
Yeah. There. And I feel like it's, like, a realistic depiction of that.
You know what this episode reminds me of? It just clicked in. It reminds me of The Bachelorette.
That's all
The Bachelorette franchise. That's all that they're trying to do. And that word connection is something they use all the time. I just want to make a connection. Oh, we had a connection.
And the
problem is that a lot of times it's fabricated. And what you can think is connection could just be the hype of the moment. And it's not actually anything real or lasting. And I think that's very similar to what's going on in this episode here.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote in my notes here with this whole interaction. I mean, we kind of already touched on it. But I wrote, I don't know if it's because I don't want Angel moving on to anyone else yet. But I do remember the first time I watched this, I instantly hated Kate. And so going into this next rewatch, I'm trying to be a little bit more open-minded and be like, okay, Angel can love whoever he wants to love, like, you know.
No,
but
he can't.
I do feel like
Chrissy said no and I said no too.
Yes, I know, right? I'm trying to be unprejudiced here and I'm biased.
Yeah.
But I do feel like, I don't know, this is really hard. And I do think it comes down to the lack of chemistry. It's just really hard to take her seriously. Also, I think her voice drives me nuts. I know that's so petty and so shallow, but I just don't think I like her voice. I don't like how like breathy she is. And I think it's a personal preference. I think she kind of drives me nuts and I don't think I'm going to like her.
See, I feel like by the time we get to the end of the episode, I can see why they would be setting Kate up as a love interest for Angel, because they kind of work in this.
Do they though? Kate,
they work kind of work like the way they kind of work together in the episode, and in the end, it's like they have an understanding, but really they don't, because like she doesn't know that he's really a vampire and stuff. But like I could see like how it would make sense. Right? Okay. Just based on their interactions. I mean,
on paper,
it's not
I
going.
Think it works.
Yeah.
But I think in the episode with the actors, it doesn't work because there's no connection, dude.
There's no connection.
We're going to hate that word by the time we end. I already
hate it. If anybody ever says that to me, I'm just going to be like, I have to go now.
Gotta go sit in the dark. Bye.
I have to go sit in the dark and stare at nothing. I do that sometimes at my desk, actually.
That actually sounds very pleasant.
After I've, you know, gone through the ringer at work. Anyway.
So Kate asks if they could go someplace more quiet. And Angel's like, oh, like I can't. It looks like he wants to. He's like, I have to stay here. And then that kind of creates a whole awkward situation because Kate feels shut down. She feels like he's using her. Like maybe he isn't actually being authentic. So then Doyle and Cordy and that blonde guy, they never give him a name in the script, which is really funny. They just end up getting into a fight. Well, not Cordelia, but Doyle and the guy. And we just have Cordelia, oh my gosh, oh my God, gasp, gasp in the script. Angel, like, comes over, keeps helping. And I was cracking up because all Angel does is grab a chair. And then he, like, pushes the guy out of the way and then, like, flings him with the chair. And then, you know, goes and punches another guy. Then they get thrown out by the bartender who says, apparently, this is a regular occurrence. And immediately the girls start flocking not to Doyle, but to Angel. Which, I mean, are we surprised? The transcript I have says, it's a Princess Leia lookalike. And I looked at her and it totally looks like it's Leia. So next time you watch the episode, look for Princess Leia.
Oh my God.
No, no.
I'm Princess Leia.
Oh yeah. Okay, sorry. Okay.
It's me.
Well, it is Leia. Leia indeed walks up to Angel. And says,
I was
well
in the
now.
Episode in 1999.
You have not aged a bit. See, this is, guys, this is what happens when you go to bed before 11 p.m.
I'm a vampire, actually.
You get tons of sleep and you remain a hot girl.
I feel like we've cracked the code, Sarah. We can't tell our secrets to anyone else other than our listeners.
Guys,
of course.
This is it. It's sleep.
Go sleep to bed early.
Sitting in the dark and living an unproblematic life with no connection.
Yes. You want to avoid the sunlight because wrinkles.
Oh, yeah.
And that's who wants to wear sunscreen all the time?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's literally a win-win. And also, beds are comfortable. And you can
have no stress because you never talk to anybody. So you live a very drama-free life. Remember they say unproblematic people have no wrinkles? There you go.
That's it.
We've done it. Angel's on to something.
We should bottle this and sell it in a store.
Yeah, and we'll call it D-Oblique.
D-Oblique. The D-Oblique elixir for youth.
Help you not make a connection.
Oh.
You'll look hot, but you'll live alone.
I love that for everybody.
Oh, my word. That's the worst. Okay. Anyway, all right. So I wrote, the whole team is just so oblivious. They don't recognize when someone is trying to talk to them. Because you have Cordelia, who's completely oblivious that Doyle's over here trying to get her attention. We have Kate disappointedly watching Angel go talk to the girl. And he's saying the same thing that he did to Kate. He's like, how are you? Like, are you okay? Are you in need of rescuing and saving? And then we cut to Sharon and Kevin laying in bed next to each other. And it's so interesting how they portray the casual sex in this episode because all the couples just look sad and lonely afterwards, like whatever connection they had either fizzled out or it just did not work. And then it's so sad because he's like, let me just hold you. And she's kind of
and
like,
I wrote,
oh,
you,
okay.
Kevin, stop it.
You, Kevin, stop it.
I wrote, you, Kevin, stop it.
You don't want
to
be
this is the time for you to leave, Kevin. Leave.
Is it is it at Kevin's house or is it it's Kevin's because Sharon dies in her own house later. So that's like the parasite brings them home to their own place so that nobody will find them. Very clever parasite. All right. So then he like wraps his arms around her and it says he sighs. It's weird because they make it seem like the parasite knows what it's doing and it's almost like sad about it at times, but then it's also so like mean at other I don't know. I don't understand the motivations.
I don't understand either. Yeah.
Yep. So then we're at an empty bar and Angel, Doyle and Cordelia are sitting around reminiscing the good old days of when they actually had game. Just kidding. Not really. Cordelia kind of is. Angel, this socializing thing is brutal and I just have never
best
related
line.
To him more.
Yes,
ever.
This is an iconic line from Angel.
And Doyle's like, I used to go to taverns, small towns where everybody used to know each other. Cordelia talks about high school. It was easy to date there. We all had so much in common being monster food every other week.
Oh, hold on. I wanted to add in, this is the first time Cordelia mistakes the curse for sex equals perfect happiness equals angelus.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
She will do this multiple times.
And that's something like we haven't really talked about on the podcast because I think that the writers themselves hadn't really fully figured out the curse and stuff yet. Yeah, that's true. So, but I'm just going to say up front, it's not sex. It's the connection.
It's the connection.
It's the connection. No, it's Buffy and Angel are soulmates, and it's the perfect happiness clause that isn't just sex, which I'm very, very glad that they made that something more, because I feel like it would have been so shallow. It would have been doing exactly what this episode is talking about if it was simply just the sex act. But yes, Cordelia, understandably, right now it's excusable. I understand why she's confused, because Angel hasn't had sex with anybody except for Buffy that we know of. But they reiterate the curse thing because, of course, they have to. We're doing a little bit of a – I feel like Cordelia gets relegated a lot of the lines of recap. And I noticed that was something they did a lot with her on Buffy. There would be whole episodes where they didn't use her for anything other than, hey, you're the person that's going to tell everyone, like, what happened in the past episode.
But at the same time, I feel like sometimes when Cordelia says it, it's oversimplified to the point where it's like,
yeah,
you're just – it's kind of just like the surface, but there's a lot more to it.
Well, she works really well as that kind of character because she's so blunt. So the way that she's able to say it in a very succinct but also very like the very basics of everything and sometimes doesn't get very deep, but it works well for the character.
Right.
All right, so cut to Sharon sitting on the edge of the bed. Kevin looks very dead behind her, like deader than just like a couple hours. And again, I love the subversion that the show always does with the blonde, because you're totally thinking that she's the victim. And I mean, technically they both are victims, but you think that she's going to be the one that's dead, not him. And that's something they've been doing since Darla in Welcome to the Hellmouth.
Also to mention, this scene is from the corrupt script. Like this exact dialogue.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Okay. So Cordelia is very awful, does not know how to type, which is hilarious because isn't she technically like the secretary of the group? So funny.
She's like, okay, spell it for me. And then Angel starts to spell Doblique and she goes, slow like,
whoa, too fast. Also kind
she's
of
like,
relatable.
D'apostrophe. And then she's like looking for the keys.
Which I really love the look that Angel shoots Doyle, almost like a help. Like, this is going to take
Angel's like,
forever.
Please get her away from this computer right now.
So Doyle goes up, finds it instantaneously. They look for a bunch of girls and guys that have been missing. And it all kind of goes back to Doblique. And that's something that they're like, oh, I bet you the police hasn't made that connection yet. So, like, let's head back there and figure out there's probably a lot more people that have been taken than we realize. But, okay, this is something I never noticed, but Angel says, go downstairs and use the library. Does Angel live above a library? Is that what that building is?
I always assumed that Angel just has a library downstairs.
You go downstairs like, and use my
he
library.
He has like a lot of books because Angel likes to read a lot.
But wouldn't it be so cool if he lives above a library? And that's why he had that relationship with that security guard. And that's why he went down all the time.
Yeah.
It would have been such a, like a cool idea if they'd actually reuse that as a reoccurring like location.
But I think it's cooler that Angel would have his own library though, Sarah.
But we never see it.
But we can imagine about it.
Can we? Okay.
And it's I'll try. Because he probably has like bookshelves, a lot of them. And they're all filled with, like, occult books and stuff.
He never had to go back to the library. Okay. All right.
Exactly.
Headcanon is Angel either lives above a ginormous, beautiful library or he has his own ginormous, beautiful
library.
But
Angel lives in a basement. So he can't.
So, but remember how he has to enter into his building and then he, like, goes through all this stuff. So I feel like
he lives
over a library. But anyway, I got very excited when I saw that because I feel like Angel definitely would.
He's a books guy.
He is. He
kind of
totally
like
is.
Giles.
Which, speaking of Giles, and this is obviously becoming a reoccurring theme throughout the show, but this whole idea of like loneliness and Angel being lonely and stuff, I just keep thinking of Out of Mind, Out of Sight when Giles and Angel have that conversation and Angel says loneliness is about the worst feeling in the world there is or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me really, really sad when I'm looking and watching the rest of the show and watching him just struggle so much to, you know, connect with people and be authentic and stuff just because he's been badly hurt, you know? All right. So then Angel's like, all right, got to go back to the bar to see if I can meet my killer. Of course he's going to run into Kate.
Literally runs into her.
She just went from 0 to 10 really fast because he like says, oh, like, I don't think you should go in there. And then she's all like, OK, well, then fine. You can go to hell. And he was like, oh, been there. Seen that. And then we have the weird moment where they're both sitting at the bar and Kate's like pretending to not notice him, not see him.
Angel's drinking a beer.
Is he really? I didn't even know.
Angel's drinking
that.
A beer. And I said that it's a Guinness.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably the only time that's ever going to happen.
Ever.
For him.
Yeah, but yeah. I just thought it was cute that Angel was drinking a beer. So
he's trying so hard to relate with the humans.
Yeah.
So he sits at the bar, tries not to make eye contact with Kate, and she's sitting right next to Sharon, who looks way more confident. Like, she's wearing, like, this red lipstick. They tried to make her super, like, woo, I'm, like, I've got all the moves now. I can get anyone. And she goes after this super nerdy guy. And then we cut to Cordelia and Doyle, and they are trying to figure out what demon, what is it that does this? And then we have this really interesting conversation, which is not in the original script at all, because Cordelia definitely knew that Doyle was a demon at that point. And she's like, ugh, demons. They're so gross. And I wrote down, like, Cordelia is still under the impression that you're either all demon or not at all. Because that's mm-hmm. something that even on Buffy, we've barely moved past. I think it was, like, the end of season 3. It was the guy Skyler in, I think it's Consequences or Enemies or something, who has the Books of Ascension.
Right.
And that's the first time you meet a full-blooded demon that Buffy's like, I don't think I need to kill him. And he's living as a human in an apartment. I don't know. I feel like Cordelia should know a little bit better.
I feel like Cordelia's very, at this point, Cordelia is very similar to how Xander thinks, where it's like demon bad, human good, period.
Yeah, that would make sense, especially since Xander, you know, her and Xander dated, and she probably heard a lot of monologues about how much he hated demons.
Yeah.
So she, like, basically insults half his parentage. She's like, I've met a lot of demons, and slime aside, not a whole lot going on there. And Doyle's like, dang it. There goes every single chance I ever had with her. So they're still talking about Sharon at the bar. Angel gets his information on who she went home with, is able to go look up Sharon in the phone book. And Kate's watching him, which is really important because obviously she's going to find him in the next scene. So then we have this gross, gross scene where Sharon and the guys just called the Screech are laying in bed, and we finally have the moment where we realize what's happening. And it's like this strange-looking reptile-like worm that comes out of Sharon's chest and burrows teeth first into the Screech's back. Gross. So gross. Ooh. So the special effects supervisor, Lonnie Persteri, I think is what it, Persteer, explains that to get the effect of the demon burrowing through the characters' bodies, Dave Miller built a prosthetic back to identically match the actor. Persteer says, we shot the actor doing his action with tracking points, little marks on his back, and I just soft-edged, matted, and tracked in a locked-off version of the actor's back with the burrowing demon and stuck it on there. So they actually built each of the actors' backs.
That's pretty cool.
And then, which is probably why it's so gross, because it looks very, very realistic. So Angel bursts through the apartment door, and I love that moment that he kind of sits there and looks surprised because he realizes, wait a minute, I shouldn't have gotten in.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, if I got in, that means that, you know, Sharon's dead. And then we see the guy, like, just in time to see, like, the back kind of close up. And this would have been that moment where we figure out what exactly this burrowing demon wants, other than I want to find the perfect host, which – I was fully prepared for him to go inside Angel because wouldn't that be a good host?
Oh my gosh.
It's not going to die.
That
right?
did cross my mind, actually. But maybe it knows that. Maybe it knows that Angel's a vampire.
Yeah, well, I think he does. He says, you're not human, is like the first thing. But I don't know. I don't understand exactly what his motivations is. But I guess I'm not really the point.
And it doesn't really say, like you said, this was the perfect scene for the demon to, like, I don't know, reveal its motivations. But all it says is the same thing. I have to find the perfect one.
Why? Like, why do you?
I was like, we already know this is the theme of the whole episode. Like, what? Like, but right. Why? What does it do for you?
Right. And I think they're not trying to go any deeper than the idea that, like, you have these people that they don't know how to make a connection with someone. But at the same time, I was like, I feel like there should have been more of a motivation. Because I think that desire for connection is good. Like, I think sometimes in this episode, it can be like, oh, it's all bad. Yeah. Because it can be a shallow version of it. But it depends upon what the two people want. If they're both just wanting a casual fling, that's fine. But the episode doesn't really fall on either side of whether or not what they're doing is wrong.
I noticed that too, where it was just like, are we saying that sex is bad once again? Like, are we going to punish yeah. everybody, kill everyone that like has right. sex in right. this show too?
Yeah, exactly. And I understand what they're trying to say by, you know, you have two people that think they're going to have a deeper connection just by having a casual hookup, which is just not true. Like, mm-hmm. I think sex can be great all on its own, but you have to go in with the expectation that that's all that this is.
Exactly.
So you have these two people that have sex and then are disappointed because they expected that it was going to be this mind-blowing, like, we're bonded now. And that's just not – you have to kind of do the work. It's more than just that. So they needed to have a motivation for this guy in order, I think, for this episode to become a good episode. And we yeah. didn't really get that.
Yeah, agreed.
So this moment is really interesting. David Boreanaz's stunt double, Mike Massa, says the scene in which he is tossed across the room upside down is his favorite stunt of the season. To get this effect, he was shot across the room using an air ram. He wow. says, the reason I like it so much is because it really knocked the heck out of me. It was 900 pounds of thrust on the air ram. I had to hit the corner just right. If I was off, if I hit dead center off the corner with my shoulders spread, it could have broken a collarbone. I had to hit it sideways, my back flat to the wall and kind of skip into it, but it just pile drove me right to the ground. Director James A. Contner was jumping up and down. He thought that was the best stunt he'd ever seen, which I went back and watched it and I was like, I mean, that's pretty cool, but like
it's cool, but
I liked the chair one better.
But it was ruined by the appearance, special guest appearance camera. Of the cameraman. Like what?
Oh, this poor show. It's like, you know, the script was written 2 days before. They hadn't gotten all their angles
I right, had you know? Never noticed it before, and I was watching it, and I was like, hold on a minute. And it's literally an arm holding a camera, yeah. and you yeah. could see it as soon as he hits the wall and, like, falls down. It's literally right there. And then, like,
you just know they saw that, and they were like, oh, but it's such a good stunt. We don't want to do it again. No one will ever notice. Yeah,
they couldn't, like, make it smaller. Like, they couldn't crop it a little bit.
Yeah, they could have done something maybe. I don't know.
I don't
but,
know.
But yeah, it's just interesting. It's so funny. I imagine if I were a director, I'd get so geeked out about those little things. But as a viewer, you're like, I mean, that was a pretty cool stunt, man. Like, you know, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, watching it doesn't look at, like anything impressive.
Yeah.
All right, so Kate runs into the apartment. This does not look good for Angel. She pulls out her badge, and Angel's, like, pretty much not fazed. He's kind of like, hey, like, we're on the same side. I'm after this guy, too. She's like, all right, well, where's your license? And he's like, I don't have one. And I took a little bit of sweet, sweet satisfaction when he knocked her down and sprinted out the window.
Oh, my God. I was going to – I literally wrote sick window dive Angel.
Yeah. It's like every episode there has to be something with the window.
He loves diving out of windows.
He does. He loves a dramatic window jump.
Like, I love that for him.
Angel, mm-hmm. the episode Angel, he jumps out the window. Amends jumps
Amends,
out the
window. He dives window. Out like head first. Yeah.
So dramatic.
Yep. How does he – yeah. He's large too. Like how is
because
he –
Because he's a hero.
Fitting Heroes through dive out windows.
Heroes it's don't true. Hit their heads.
Heroes don't use doors.
Heroes don't need sleep either. They don't need light. They just sit in the corner in the dark.
That's right.
That's what heroes do. So he runs down the street. Kate watches. Camera pans down. The Screech is like – it looks like he's suddenly homeless. He's like sitting down there like, I have no home. I have no warm body to burrow into. I was like – for a split second, felt a little bad for him. Then I was like, what in the world? Because I was like, why is this poor man just sitting down? I don't know. Whatever.
Because he's a demon.
Because he's a demon. I'm like feeling bad for the demon. But it is also interesting too, like Kate being a police officer feeds into the very detective noir feel yes. because in a lot of these shows, they always have like that buddy cop that like feeds them the info and stuff from the department. So Kate kind of fits that bill right there.
Mm-hmm.
So Doyle and Cordelia walk into her apartment to do research, which I thought was really, really smart that Angel immediately clues them in like, hey, you cannot do research at my place because now the police know where I am. I was like, oh, that's super – that was a clever way of getting them to Cordelia's apartment.
Yes.
And having like some like good moments there. This part was hilarious. Doyle picks up the bra and Cordelia's like, ew, Cordelia wears bras. Ooh, she has girly parts.
And then Doyle steps in a bowl of oatmeal and he goes, you're disgusting.
Everyone is so relatable in this show. That is something I have absolutely been loving, is I feel like all these characters feel very real, you know?
That's what I wrote. I was like, Cordelia's apartment situation is so relatable today in 2022. And that is sad because the housing market is a fucking joke.
That's what you meant. So guys, I will have you know, Leia texts me and she's like, oh man, this episode, she's like, casual sex, casual hookups and like the housing market, so relatable. And I was like, I don't know where you're going with that, but I want to know. I want to know.
This is where I'm going. Like,
Cordelia cannot afford much. Yep.
Honestly. And like, what is more realistic than that in today's economy?
Yeah. I think I obviously love Buffy. I love the Scoobies. I love their whole dynamic. But I think watching Angel, I just have bonded with it on a whole other level because, I mean, I'm not in my 20s anymore, but I'm around-ish the age that they are. And so just watching things like this, like the dirty bowl left out, just the horrible living conditions, all of this stuff, I'm like, yes, this is my life right now, you know?
Yeah.
So then we have that cool moment where Angel's like, hey, you have to like let me in because I'm a vampire and stuff, which again, really, really love. And Angel and Doyle hardcore judging Cordelia's living conditions. He's like, wait, you actually live here? She's like, yeah, okay, it's my fault the maid service was interrupted. It was supposed to go home, hotel, hotel, husband. She had her whole life planned out.
And it just did not work out. Cordelia didn't manifest enough.
No,
in episode one, in City of, she did not do enough meditation and manifestation.
So Angel fills them in and says, Kate is actually a cop. She found me with the body. It looks really bad. They put two and two together. Cordelia and Doyle are like, hey, it's a burrower demon. And again, another moment to be like, oh, its motivation is this. But then Angel says something interesting. He's like, it eviscerates its victims as it moves from body to body. And it may only be able to do it after some kind of a sex act in exchange of fluids kind of thing. So I don't know how accurate that is, because later on you have the bartender, when he assaults Kate, he just rips her shirt and was actually going to just hold her to his chest. And that was about – there was no sex act. So I'm curious, like
– maybe in order to find the one, maybe in order to find like the best body or whatever that it's looking for, it has to engage in like a sexual act first. But when the bartender was doing it, it was just for survival. Like, he was going to jump out of Kate right after, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that was the case. I don't know. But yeah, I wish they had explained it a little bit more, because
– unless that particular guy got off on tearing shirts and was like, that's my sex act, you know? Oh, like, God. I just don't understand. Ugh, I know.
This whole metaphor is just so icky. Like,
it's very icky.
That's what I wrote. This monster is extremely gross and disturbing. Another sex is bad metaphor. We get it, Joss.
It's just going to keep going. Yes, you didn't get enough, Joss, and now you're just taking it out on everybody who's young and attractive and can.
Mm.
So Angel mentions how extraordinarily strong it was, which I did notice as well. Says it may be hard to kill, so ask them to do more research on how to kill it. And he's like, well, I'm going to go back out to the bar and see if I can find this thing. And Cordy's like, what makes you think it will show? And knows that you're after it. And Angel's like, it'll be out there. It's got to keep trying to make a connection. Ugh. And Cordy's like, why? And that's what we all want to know. And Angel's like, why? Because that's what lonely people do. Okay, Angel.
We know that already.
Some of the lines are a little cringy. I wrote down, that's what heroes do, make a connection. Oh
my God.
All right, so then Touched by Vast plays, and this song is fire. I'm going to add it to my Spotify playlist because I forgot how good it was. And it actually, like, the lyrics and everything just, like, really works well with the episode. Do you not like the song?
I don't know the song. I don't think.
When you were listening to it in the episode, they had the montage when you have like Kate.
Yeah, but I don't remember it. Like, I don't remember. Yeah,
okay, well, guys, look
when Kate was illegally breaking into Angel's apartment.
Without a warrant? What is going on here, Kate? Kate
just
girl.
Breaking in.
Giving me bad vibes.
Honestly.
All right, so the Screech is talking to another gorgeous lady, and there's just like cut back and forth and back and forth between the bar. What's going on? Thankfully, when Kate's like looking around Angel's house, she opens his fridge and it's empty, which I was like, whew, that could have been like really bad for
bags
him right
of
there.
Blood. And also there's like weapons all over his walls, and she just walks right by it.
She's like, wow, this is really sketch, but he's really hot. So there's got to be another explanation.
He does martial arts for a living, maybe.
That's what it is. Yeah. Yes. I definitely didn't find him in the same room with a dead woman, you know? All right. So then there's this moment where Angel's walking down the street and it's like really, really bright. And it kind of looks like it's – did you notice that? Like it
yes.
looks like it's like daytime.
Yeah.
So according to Joss's comments on the posting board, it was supposed to be like pre-dawn, like just when the sun is coming up. But some mistake with lightning in post-production or something. So Joss says sunlight. Yeah, that's been a problem. It's just hard for the DP to light the show and avoid it entirely. And then tonight there was a shot that was color timed so that what was supposed to be pre-dawn came out like post-dawn. Bear with us. We know it's not all there yet.
I definitely noticed that.
Yeah. I think this episode in general was just rushed. The fact that everyone probably got their scripts like the day of, and then you had the people that like the lighting and all that stuff didn't have much time to prepare. So like it kind of shows in some places. So then Doyle and Cordelia are asleep
Cute.
Next to each other on the sofa. Angel definitely looks a little irritated when he comes in like, I've been up all night doing all this work and you guys are asleep. He like slams the door very intentionally. And Doyle's all like, oh, hey, definitely didn't have my arm around Cordelia there. And then so apparently the Burwer guy, his name is Talmer. But we get a tiny, tiny sliver of a backstory. They said Talmer's been around forever, a dawn of time kind of dude. So then Angel's like, all right, wow, I'm giving up already. We have no clue where to go. I don't know where it's going to strike next. It's not like there's a bar that it really loves, you know, happening. And so he's like, I'm going to call Kate, the person who hates me. And I was like, okay, I feel like we skipped a couple of steps here, Angel.
Yeah.
You don't really know its weaknesses. You could go back to the bar. Like, I just, this episode is very weird.
It is very bizarre.
So we cut to Kate sitting at her desk. I'm like, does this woman ever sleep? She's like, why would I help you? Angel's like, we're on the same side. A part of you knows that it's not me because, you know, you saw all my weapons and there was like my house looked completely not suspicious at all. I don't know why. He's like, but I think it's supposed to be like we made a connection. You know,
yeah,
it's not me.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like the entire episode is implying that Angel and Kate have actually made a real connection, whereas everybody else has not. So,
okay.
All right.
All right. So Angel's like, all right, meet me at the bar. If you think I'm your man after that, arrest me. And they decide to meet at 7 o'clock, which is a much, much more reasonable time. Angel understands the need for beauty sleep.
Angel knows.
I love that he does tell her. He's like, you can come armed, wired, covered by sharpshooters, do whatever it takes to make you feel secure. And I was like, what a good guy. What a good guy. And then he says, I can help you, Kate, but you're just going to have to trust me, which I felt like, I was like, okay, Angel, you know she struggles to trust. I feel like you're asking a lot of her. So again, relying on that connection that none of us
that
saw.
Line to the whole trusting, not trusting, that was also like just reiterated so many times in this episode where it's like, we get it. Like, we don't need to keep repeating the same thing over and over again. Like, Kate says it a handful of times. And it's like we understand.
Yeah, we get it. So Kate's waiting there. The bartender double crosses her, tells her that, hey, like, you know, Angel's waiting out in the alleyway. I don't know. It looks like he's going to run. Goes out there, hits her over the head. And then, oh, this part is probably the most overt, like, sexual assault we've seen. Like, even though nothing actually happens, it's just – it feels so violating to watch him tear her shirt.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, wow, could you imagine how they would have filmed the original script? Like, this feels very icky. So the parasite's in the middle of coming out, and Angel cracks down on the bartender's head, and they get pushed down into, like, this basement place that's in the alleyway? I don't know. I don't quite understand the physics of it all. But the bartender goes back inside after locking them down there in this basement and is like trying to push like flaps of skin back.
Falling apart.
Piecing himself back together.
So does that mean that if the demon doesn't jump bodies by a certain amount of time, it like decomposes? Like, is that what they're implying?
I think so.
It has to switch bodies every night.
That's exhausting. Could you imagine having to go and schmooze someone new every single night? Like, no, what happens if you're not successful?
You die.
This guy's been around since the dawn of time. That's exhausting.
That's why he's ugly.
That's why he's ugly.
I see you for what you truly are.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Ugly.
Ugly. Oh, I love She's the Man. I need to watch that again. Sebastian!
I love that movie.
Yes. That's like my comfort movie. I need to watch that again. That's the only time I've ever found Channing Tatum hot. I know I'm like hordes of women are screaming at me. Oh my God, I just don't find him very attractive. I know.
Okay,
I know.
Sarah, we're going to have to agree to disagree here.
Do you find him hot in every single like movie he's in, or is there like any particular?
I think he's a very attractive looking man.
Okay.
I feel like I'm more attracted to him now that he's like
older.
Back when he was in like Step Up and like She's the Man, he just was very like he looks so young looking back on it now.
Yeah.
But now he's like this like big like man, and he's got those like big juicy lips and like, you know, the body.
Sorry, David Boreanaz. We love you too. We'll be back.
David Boreanaz is my number one, but like Channing Tatum is like really nice to look at.
See, I think for me, my type is very much like the woodcutter type, like the big beard and like a little hairy, not too hairy. But I don't like the guys that are just like baby skinned, smooth, and look like pretty boys. Like I want my guy to look rugged. Like he can go like tear a tree down for me. You know what I mean?
Nice. Like a little lumberjack or something.
Yes, exactly. Like for instance, okay, Henry Cavill, regular Henry Cavill, he's okay. But you get him dressed up as like The Witcher.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean?
You know what bothers me about him? And I know this is like so mean, but I can't get over his butt chin.
Whoa!
I just can't get over his butt.
Really?
It's so deep. You could eat cereal out of his butt chin.
But would you? Is the question.
Yes, of course, but I would not. I don't know. I don't want to like look at it. I just
really?
It reminds me of like a belly button, and I just like don't like belly buttons. That's and it's just
so
like,
funny. You're probably the only person on this planet that thinks that about Henry Cavill.
It's like
I think butt chins are kind of cool. Like Viggo, what's his name? Viggo, the guy who plays Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. I can't remember his last name. He has a butt chin, and I think he's so attractive.
They should have a beard if they have a butt chin.
That's true. You didn't like his mustache that he had?
I like the mustache, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Like the mustache.
All right, moving on. Everyone's all like, right. Wow, I did not sign up for this.
Back to the episode.
Back to the episode. Angel is trying to throw himself against the door. It is not budging. Oh, yeah, I missed the part where the bartender is being an absolute creep, but we know what's going on out there. Angel's like, all right, Kate, I can get us out of here. He pulls out this like grappling hook.
Another gadget.
Kate's like, who are you? You know, which apparently that whole line is taken straight out of the 1989 Batman with Michael Keaton and Kim Basinger. So Angel gives the rope a good pull. The beam comes crashing down. They look at each other and Kate's just like, I'm going to shoot the lock. Got to do this myself. Bartender looks completely awful, is just coming up to random woman saying, please, I just want to hold you. Angel and Kate run out of the bar. They split up because that's what heroes do. I feel like they do.
This is true.
The bartender, of course, is pulling yet another blonde girl into an alley. If I was in LA, I would be dyeing my hair a completely different color because that seems to be the one that everyone is like a beacon. Come get me,
guys. Or if you're Cordelia.
Oh, yeah. Or unless you're Cordelia. Angel and the bartender are fighting. The girl kind of gets away. And then, of course, we see that bucket of fire. Angel kind of kicks him into the fire. He's like got this horrible screeching noise. And Angel's on the ground as the bartender's advancing. And Kate comes around the corner, shoots him, and we cut to the end. The fire truck and ambulance. And this was really kind of like, okay, guys, okay, writers. When there, Kate comes in, she's like, wow, like, it must have been that bartender. Talked to him so many different dozens of times. I never had a clue. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, if that many people had died, there's probably a time when, like, maybe the bartender wasn't there that night. Like, he had an alibi for each one. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They really did not do their diligence in
it. It felt like
sure
it was wrapped up, like, way too quickly. Yes. And it didn't seem like there was any type of time jump. It was like, oh, she just figured it out now.
Yeah.
And that's
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So it felt like it cleaned up a little too nicely, but we understand why they're doing that.
Yeah.
And Angel's like, well, you know, it's just hard to get to know people. You just never know, as he's like over there with, you know, vampire teeth. And she's like, yes, I didn't thank you for saving my life. And he's like, I think saving mine is a start. Basically, you can do more. And then she's like really honest with him. She says, I think you should know I searched your place illegally with no warrant. And I think that part was really interesting because I think that tells us a lot about Kate's character. Mm-hmm. I feel like the way that she's willing to bend rules and the fact that she works alone. And then I hear how she's kind of like trusting Angel. I think she could either be a really good ally or she's going to be somewhat volatile, just yes. judging by the fact that she has trust issues and she's willing to kind of go off book and do things that, like, is not by the book. So
you can't really tell how she's going to react to things.
Yeah. So it makes for a little bit of intrigue. I don't think it's, like, fully predictable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, I guess we can start fresh, no secrets. And I was like, oh, here we go. Like,
except the biggest secret of them all.
And I understand why he didn't tell her, you know, because I don't know that this would have been the moment to. But I think it would have been good for him to be like, hey, I still have some secrets, but I'm not quite ready to share them with you. And I will at some point, just so she's not blindsided later on. But I feel like this is going to come back to bite him in the butt.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So he gives her his calling card and she's like, what is this, a lobster?
In the original script, they called it a crab.
I mean, either way, it does not look like an angel.
Same thing, but no,
it looks like kind of like a pig in a blanket. Like, it looks like it's a little hot dog.
Yum.
And then, I know, I'm so hungry. All right, so this is going to be the most random episode to edit. All right. All right, so Angel's in his office and he's trying to be so nice to his friends. He's like, I know you guys have been working hard. I mean, you've been cooped up inside a lot and show my appreciation. I was thinking, you know, like, we could, and he like's trying to like spit it out. We could, you know, maybe for fun, go out. And Cornelia's like, or we could just go home. And Doyle's like, you can sit in the dark alone. And Angel just is like,
thank God.
Yes.
Angel, you made the right choice.
That's me when someone cancels plans. I'm like, yes.
Thank you.
So he goes and he sits down in his desk and the lights go off and he's just
And
got
he has
this
like smirk
smile.
On his face. He's just like, dark.
This is the life. I'm like, dude, if you're going to be doing this inside of your office, if you're going to be just hanging out here, get a comfier chair. That does not Honestly. Look comfy. Like, I understand wanting to be alone, but be comfortable, man. Like, go put your pajamas on or something.
And why does he have to do it in his office upstairs? Why can't he go, like, downstairs to his house?
Because it takes 30 minutes through his elevator to go downstairs. Yeah, and he's like, oh, I'm just too tired. You know, like, when you should go to bed, but you don't want to go take your makeup off because it just takes so long, so you just sit upstairs or wherever.
I don't do that, Sarah.
You don't
do that. I take my makeup off every day.
Well, you are incredibly unrelatable. Just kidding.
I don't think Angel gets tired, though, because he's a hero. So
I do think it is fitting that the next episode is called In the Dark, because we leave with Angel still in the dark. So it definitely feels like they have somewhere they're going with Angel's arc. And I'm really curious to see, like, where it all heads. All right. So that was Lonely Heart, not Lonely Hearts. That was really fun to record, but I don't think I want to watch that episode again for a while.
Yeah.
Kind of ready to
That was a miss for me as well.
Mm-hmm. Thumbs down.
Kind of sloppy.
It was repetitive.
I liked some moments. Like, there were some good comedy moments and, like, character moments.
I hope we get more Doyle and Cordelia moments moving forward, because I feel like they were the best part of the episode, honestly. I could do without Kate, but I have a feeling she'll be back.
It's okay, Sarah. Nobody will ever replace Buffy in Angel's heart.
I know, but I hate it when I see them trying. makes me mad.
As they have to do on a show on the WB in 1999. Of course, everybody there always has to be a love interest. Yep.
Yep. All right, guys. Well, that was Lonely Heart, and we are so excited to be back with you guys. It's just going to be good. We've got some like guests that are coming on. We've got some really fun people that'll add some insights and some just like, I think some really good perspectives to different episodes. So I'm very excited about that personally.
I'm also so excited. I feel like you and I have like similar opinions about things. So it'll be nice.
Yeah.
To have somebody come in that's going to just like break that up a little bit.
Totally.
So that people aren't like bored with me and you just being like, yes, agreed. Yes, queen. Yes. I agree.
Yes, Angel. Yes.
Angel. Like, although everyone that will come on our podcast will be swooning over Angel. So that will never change.
That's kind of a given for sure.
If your resume doesn't have that on it, you can't come here.
All right, guys, that was Lonely Heart. We hope you guys enjoyed that. Please definitely email us or DM us and let us know your guys' thoughts. Do you like Kate? Do you like this episode? Do you feel like they should have gone with the original script? So, yeah, with that, guys, we will see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.